first, scroll through Facebook, Instagram, or any social media site, and you're bound to see parents sharing stories and pictures of their kids. For children born in the last decade plus, it's common for parents to post everything from ultrasounds to first steps to the first day of school, and so on, through their kids' lives. But what might seem like harmless sharing could have unforeseen consequences as those kids become adults with their digital footprint established before they're aware of what's happening. Our next guest is a legal expert who says parents should rethink what they post about their kids online. Leah Plunkett is an associate professor of legal skills and the director of academic success at the University of New Hampshire School of Law. She's the author of the book, Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online. Leah, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Wonderful to be here.
Well, a lot of attention out there is on training kids to be careful what they do online. You say, yeah, sure. But what about the parents? So why do you focus on parents in this new book?
Parents are really unregulated when it comes to whether, why, when, and how, and what we post about our kids. So while our children are receiving lessons in school on digital citizenship or cyberbullying or social media, we as parents really are growing up digital along with our kids. And in almost all circumstances, the law allows us to choose whether or not to sharent, as I say, and others say as well, to disseminate kids' private information in one or more digital formats.
And this is this sharenting, share parenting. Talk about that term and why you use it.
Yes, that term can mean different things to different people. I certainly did not invent it, but I do use it a little differently than some other experts. I use it to mean everything that parents, teachers, grandparents, coaches, and really any trusted adult who has private information about a child shares or transmits or really takes any action with respect to that private information through one or more digital technologies. So I don't limit it to parents, and I don't limit it to social media. And I think that sets me apart a little bit from the ways that term is more commonly used.
And you look at some individual hazards of this for kids, but at the heart of it is this, I think, concept that a lot of us aren't really thinking about, that as that kid is growing up and their identity is developing, there's another being, a digital version of that kid growing up, and we're filling that dossier through the years.
We are, and we're doing it without our children's consent, without their knowledge, and in ways that may really come back to bite them down the road. And it can come back to bite them in terms of kind of just an experiential level. So they Google themselves when they're old enough to Google and are like, really? Why is this there? And also because we live in an age where data brokers and other for-profit corporations are in the business of amassing seemingly discrete data points about people and aggregating them and analyzing them and using them to predict all sorts of important things that we don't necessarily know they're doing.
We'll dig into that a little bit more. But also, you're not just talking about social media. You're talking about, in your book, the ways that we feel kids need surveillance of one sort or another. And that kind of information that we surveil them with can end up in exactly the same place. What are the kinds of things you're talking about?
I'm talking about the ways that parents and educators in particular use readily available surveillance and tracking technologies. So it can be an app, if you're a parent, that you put on your child's phone for a school system. It can be video cameras and sensors. And we're using these types of readily, commercially available, not that hard to use, not that expensive to buy, products so that we can keep tabs on our kids' whereabouts. But part of the problem is, as you gestured to in your question, is we don't have a lot of transparency into or control over what the company that's actually getting that information for us and letting us know, yes, little Johnny checked in safely, or no, little Susie's missing. We don't necessarily know what they're doing with it. And we're really depriving our kids of the opportunity to start to learn to navigate the world themselves without being surveilled and tracked in real time.
Talking to Leah Plunkett from the University of New Hampshire School of Law. Her new book is called Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online. You can join in with your thoughts and questions at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Leah, I think probably a lot of parents and other relatives and friends might think, no big deal. These are kids. They're minors. Companies, there's legal protections. Companies can't exploit this kind of data that's out there about them. What's the reality?
The reality is that the legal protections that are in place at the federal level for what companies can do with kids' digital information are really limited. COPPA, which would probably be the one that listeners are likely to have heard of, is the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act. And that act, which people commonly think, oh, that's the law that says that companies can't do nefarious things with kids' information, that law is actually limited to personal information, sometimes shortened to PI, for the law nerds out there, that for-profit software providers collect directly from kids under 13. So COPPA does not regulate, it recommends best practices for, but it does not regulate personal information collected from children 13 and over, doesn't regulate personal information collected by a nonprofit entity, and most important, it doesn't regulate personal information that parents share about their kids, and parents have a legal right in almost all circumstances to share that information.
Let's talk about what kind of information can, again, voluntarily be shared, especially by parents, and how it can add up, you know, starting with birthday and maybe birth weight or maybe even before the birth itself. You envision a possible product in the future that would get, I can't remember the name of it, a TOT score or something like that.
Yes, where, Tyke Bites.
That's it. Yeah. So talk about what the future could hold if we keep sharing this kind of information about our kids.
Law professors are dangerous that way. We like hypotheticals. So the Tyke Bites scenario that I put in the book says, okay, so parents, you are voluntarily sharing with private companies information about your children even before they're born in many instances. Folks use fertility apps, folks use fertility tracking bracelets. And then as soon as the child's born, as you said, there's a Facebook post that is kind of name, you know, name, rank, and serial number. So time and place of birth, weight, full name, et cetera. And it just keeps right on going to include education apps, smart devices we put in our homes, and so on. And so the hypothetical I envision says, when will a private company amass all of the data points it can get that are not protected by a privacy law that just regulates a certain subset? Like we talked about COPPA. There's also in like the healthcare industry limitations on the use of healthcare data, and with education records, some limitations from FERPA, the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act. But the bulk of what parents themselves are voluntarily putting out there, parents can choose to do that. And except as companies may be limited by their own terms of use or privacy policies or what we'd call laws of general applicability. So a company can't just start, heaven forbid, manufacturing child porn out of images that parents put on Facebook and say, well, the parents shared them. But those are really small carve-outs. So Tyke Bites says, by the time that my child, who's in elementary school now, applies for college, how am I going to feel if that child has a Tyke Bites score, a personal capital score that a college or employer or insurance provider is using to rank my child based on a proprietary secret algorithm that a company generates about him, her, or them that purports to tell the company my child's odds of being successful? And I hypothesize that we're moving in that direction and that we have reasons to be very alarmed about the fact that that's where we're headed.
You raise an even more fundamental concern about kids, even beyond the legal implications here and the privacy. You say kids should have a right to grow and develop outside the public eye, and you're worried that they're losing it. Can you talk about that?
I think that at its core, childhood needs to be a protected time to play. And playing means making mischief. It means making mistakes and to grow up better for having made them. And I do think that we're seeing a really fundamental transformation of how we understand childhood. And I think we used to understand childhood as being more protected. So, you know, go play in the woods, try not to hurt anyone, come back for dinner, right? What happens in the woods stays in the woods unless, you know, you poke someone's eye out. Hopefully you don't. But we've moved from a place from of that more traditional notion to, gosh, I'm going to follow you into the woods and take a few pictures. Or when you get back, I'm going to, you know, do a little Instagram post about, you know, how cute and dirty you are from playing in the woods, just to, you know, go with that example. And I think even putting aside my fears about a Tyke Bites scenario or another type of data-driven decision-making scenario, I just think we're really losing something magical in terms of our kids' ability to enjoy their childhood and adolescence, and that without that magical, more protected time, that our kids are actually not going to be able to grow up and develop a sense of autonomy and a sense of personal agency because they didn't really get to play in a protected way.
We're talking to Leah Plunkett from the University of New Hampshire School of Law. She's the author of the book Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you have questions about online privacy and sharing photos and information about children online? Do you think kids should be able to grow up without their parents documenting their every move and sharing it with everybody on the Facebook, the Instagram, Twitter, what have you? Or do you think parents have the right to post what they want about their kids to their social media followers? Do you see parents you know, maybe parents you are, oversharing? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or post, without too much detail, I guess, on the Ideas Network Facebook page. We'll pick up the conversation coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Ferret. Right now, we're picking up our conversation about parents who share stories, information, and photos of their children in the digital world. Our guest is Leah Plunkett, Associate Professor of Legal Skills at the University of New Hampshire School of Law. Her new book is called Sharenthood, like Share and Parenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online. You can join in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about sharing stories or information about your kids online? How do you think parents should approach this? Do you see people putting up information or photos of their kids and thinking, gosh, I don't know if I would have shared that? If you are a former kid who's grown up now, do you look back and say, wow, my parents put way too much stuff up there about me? Call 800-642-1234. Current kids, too. 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. Leah, in the realm of what we do about this, I don't know that you really give a hard and fast answer. You give a range of options from government action to kind of a culture change. What kind of remedies do you see out there?
You're right. I give a thought compass, and I suggest that all of us, both individually and as within institutions we're a part of, think about the principles of play, forget, connect, and respect. And so as we're looking at everything from our own choices as parents, grandparents, teachers, to institutional choices like what laws and regulations are there, what kinds of purchasing decisions is my local school making, that we start by having a conversation about our values, and then we start thinking about what tools there might be in our own toolkits or our institutional toolkits to advance those values.
We heard from Jennifer in Oshkosh. Jennifer says her sister-in-law shares so many pictures of her family that you can pull up pictures of basically their whole life online. She says it's just too much information floating out there about them. Now, Jennifer's in-laws are not alone, I'm sure, so that we can build a whole life history just by following people on social media.
We can, and unfortunately, there are wrongdoers out there who will take advantage of that. We know that kids can be victims of identity theft in a disproportionate way to adults. There are some states like Utah that have a bureau within their attorney general's office that is focused on child identity theft because you get that unblemished social security number that really should not have a credit history attached to it, and you are able to piece together the other identifying pieces of information that you might need to create an application for credit as that child, you really can amass quite a lot of fraudulent credit products by stealing kids' identities. And there are other risks of overexposure, too. They include serving up pictures that people who want to manufacture child pornography can use, as well as making kids targets for other types of criminal or illegal activity. And that's separate from the concerns about sort of a datafied or commodified childhood.
Right. And with that datafied and commodified childhood, you mentioned a story. We've talked about it on the air before on this show, and it's been out there. Maybe not everybody's heard it. A kid who was shopping on Target online, and Target put together the pieces in an unexpected way. Can you share that story?
Yes, there was a father who learned that his teenage daughter was pregnant when there were coupons mailed to the home for pregnancy related products. And Target had figured out that this girl was expecting and figured it out before her family did, and so effectively outed her to her family with a really intimate issue. And I think that is, you're absolutely right, an example that many, although not all folks, have heard of. But that kind of, you know, weird distribution of information where sometimes these private companies learn things about our kids or even us before we do or our partners do is really scary. I actually, after this book came out, I had someone come up and tell me that they had figured out that their partner was shopping for rings because they share a laptop. And they started getting followed by ads for rings. Exactly. And this actually was a happy
spoiler alert.
But it was. It was like a total personal life spoiler. And it led to an interesting conversation between this couple. So
Hopefully the ring was for them, not for somebody
yes.
else.
Yes. Oh, my gosh. Yes, it was.
Talking to Leah Plunkett from the University of New Hampshire School of Law. Her new book is called Sharenthood, Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online. Still time for you to join in at 800-642-1234. How do you control online information about your kid? What do you post? What do you keep away from the public? Do you see people overshare? 800-642-1234. Leah, on the remedy side of things, again, you talk about one legal approach that sounded really interesting. If somebody has a swimming pool in their backyard, they can be liable for other people misusing it. It's called an attractive nuisance if they haven't, you know, put up fences or whatever. You see a possible application of this legal concept of attractive nuisance to companies that maybe are luring people to share information that they then misuse.
I do. I think that as we're learning more about the ways in which products have been designed to capture our attention and sort of like casinos lull us into forgetting that we're spending money, the attention merchants, as they've been called by other law professors, lull us into forgetting that we're sharing private information. And so I do see a way for litigators to be thinking about this longstanding attractive nuisance doctrine from tort law that basically says if you have something that you know is likely to be attractive and you fail to protect it, you can be liable. And it's a bit of a jump in terms of getting a court to actually think about it. But conceptually, it really is sort of after the same thing, which is if you're putting it out there and you either are trying to lure people to it or know that people might be attracted to it, then you have an obligation to put up, in this case, sort of a digital fence around it.
Looking at possible laws, not just working in the legal system, but say Congress changing laws, is this a case where technology and social media changes so fast that by the time something gets passed, if something can get passed, it's not really directly relevant anymore?
That happens all the time, and it has been a longstanding problem for the use of the legal and regulatory toolkit. I do think, though, there would be a way to do federal law reform here that could work because you would not tie it to existing technologies. And so what I would look to see if we were going to use our federal law toolkit would be a federal law that regulated tech companies directly, so not parents, not teachers, not grandparents, but the tech companies, let's say over a certain size, so we're sparing the mom and pop startup. And it says to those tech companies, you are not allowed to use private information about children from any source to make certain categories of major life decisions, including education, jobs, insurance products, unless there's another law that permits or requires you to do so. So I'm not looking to say a school can't assign people to different math tracks, let's say. But you're not allowed to do that unless a parent or guardian for a kid under 18 specifically consents to that use, that you're transparent about it. You tell them it's like a nutrition label. We're going to use the data from this Fitbit. I'm just hypothetical. Mm-hmm. I don't know if this actually happens. You know, we're going to sell that to a data broker. They're then going to aggregate it into a type of digital gatekeeper that will make employment predictions. They can only do that if the parent has said yes to the whole use. And once kids turn 18, they can request access to and the ability to modify or erase the data that's been collected about them by these tech companies, unless there's a law or other legally binding instrument that requires them to keep it. And you would have it be enforceable by a private right of action. So kids or parents could sue tech companies directly, get damages, get attorney's fees, so that it would actually be enforced. Because I think the ketchup is out of the bottle so to speak, on a lot of these sharenting behaviors. I think we can roll back some of them, but not all of them. And so I do think a new federal law that is about, that regulates the usage by tech companies is the best way to go.
Let's bring on a caller now. Angela is with us in Madison. Angela, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Hey, what would you want to tell us about?
Just two things. I'm an aunt. The short version would be, it concerns me the apps that require permissions that I think most people don't read through. That basically you're writing away your rights to pretty much all of your information that's relevant when you download them, and they make it very easy. The second thing is birth dates that, you know, I think it's great when people share and, you know, your family members share, but those birth dates aren't going to change, and they're out there and they're easily discoverable. That applies to adults and kids online, actually, but it's just, it's unfortunate that you're giving a lot of probably nefarious sorts
Angela,
of
people. Angela, I'm going to jump in. Thanks for the call. Just about out of time, Leah. Is that a good first step? Let's maybe not start putting our kids' birthdays on, say, Facebook?
She's identified an excellent first step. If you are putting birthdays, home addresses, pictures of homes where they could be identified, or other identifying information about your child and your family, I would take those off of social media. I also advise a sharenting checklist for yourself. Just try to take stock of all of those places where you are either consciously, like on social media, or maybe unconsciously, like having a smart refrigerator, letting data about your kids be collected digitally. Just make a list like you would a shopping list. And if you're comfortable with what you see on it, that's totally cool. If you're not comfortable or you need to ask more questions, it's a great place to start.
Leah, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Leah Plunkett, Associate Professor of Legal Skills and Director of Academic Success at the University of New Hampshire School of Law. Her new book is Sharenthood: Why We Should Think Before We Talk About Our Kids Online.